The Guardian.
Football Weekly, only a day late with the big news from the world of football. Manchester Derby, City win, United see less of the ball than Cinderella with a broken pumpkin. Best attacking move, Fergie on Roberto on the sideline. England, FA announced Headbanger to replace Punk. Forget the fact that he can't pronounce his R's. Can he get his into gear in time for June? We round up the bottom three, top three races in the Premier League, salute the ecstatic Latics and all the rest of the weekend's news. Sid joins us to talk post-Pep Barca, and we hear about Lazio's bizarre post-game brawl. There's all of that plus your posts and tweets and more in today's Football Weekly. Well, listeners, when I tell you that I'm faced here today in our orbiting pod station by Jacob Steinberg, Barry Glendening and Barney Roney, ending years of self-imposed exile, you'll understand how excited I am about today's show. Hello to you all.
Hi, James.
Hi. Excellent.
Ooh, shakalaka.
Exactly. I'm very excited about this pod, also because we've got that tremendously important and exciting derby match to begin with today. Barry, it more than lived up to the build-up, it says here.
No, it didn't. Jimbo, you, I think, were mercifully released from watching it because you had to talk about other football.
I was in a dark room.
The dark room in Southampton.
This wasn't entirely unexpected, was it? We did say, you know, there'll be loads of build-up and it'll end 1-0, 0-0 or something like that.
I mean, the quality of football was pretty poor, but it was a tense, exciting game because City only won by one goal, so there was always a slight chance Manchester United would get back into it. But they played sort of badly and defensively that I think for the first time in 3 years, they didn't have a shot on target, if even a shot on goal. They did
a Blackburn.
Appalling. Hmm. Fergie insisted before the game in his interview, you know, shortly before the kickoff, that he's never sent a team out to play for a draw in his life and wasn't about to start now. But I think that team was set out to try and contain City and get the 0-0 draw, which would have done United fine. And they just weren't able to cope. Their midfield was slow, immobile, old. And City's midfield and wingers just made hay.
Here's Santosh Sarangan with a little bit of a stat for you. United's average age yesterday was 5 years older than the team that they put out in August against Spurs and Arsenal. Interesting there. Barney?
Well, I disagree with Barry a bit. I thought it was actually not a bad game, as these games go. I thought United were pretty terrible, but City were not bad. And they were actually able to adjust their play a bit and change the tempo after a slow start, which United were not able to do at all. I thought they didn't play too badly for such a tense game, and they looked like champions, which United certainly didn't.
All right, although it's not over yet, of course. Jacob?
Yeah, no, I think 3 weeks ago we were saying the title race was over. There were 8 points clear, so I've got to be a bit careful now to say that it's all done and dusted, because City have to go to Newcastle on Sunday, which is a pretty tough game. They could lose, they could draw, and if they do, then you'd expect United to go back ahead of them, playing Swansea and Sunderland.
Although United have been defying expectations of late, have they not? Particularly, as we say, not even getting a shot on goal in the biggest game of their season. Oh, sorry, Barney.
Sorry, I was just going to say there's a lot of analysis about it, but there's no great mystery about any of this, isn't it? Sort of chickens coming home to roost. I mean, this is a bigger subject, but United just haven't invested in their team, and City have, and football is all about money. And it wasn't so much it was an old team. There were seven British players in there, which is most unusual.
Mm. Jacob, any observation you'd like to make about this game?
Well, personally, I was really puzzled by the selection from the start. I was saying to loads of Man United fans that he was going to play Park. But
where were you watching the game, Jacob?
I was watching it in Berwick Street in Oxford Circus.
With who?
With Rob Smythe and other Man United fans. Right. So it was quite amusing watching them gradually lose it as the game went on. They were pretty annoyed about the way that United set up. I don't think that it really fits with the ethos of the club to be so defensive. And I think once they went behind, they never looked like they were going to get back into it. I think that it was a team set up not to lose. And once they went behind, they didn't really know what to do.
Was this collective kind of chorale of United fans, were they blaming Sir Alex or the players for the performance?
I think more Ferguson. Not to play Valencia was just against a pretty ropey fullback in Clichy was just a bizarre decision.
Right.
And also to isolate Rooney, who doesn't really fit the playing as a lone striker.
Does he not? I thought he was supposed to prefer playing as a lone striker.
I think him and Welbeck playing really well together this season. So
cool.
I thought Yaya Toure did a right number on Rooney. He just annoyed him for the whole game, and Rooney was being very tetchy and argumentative, and at one stage he marched over to Andre Mariner, the referee, and called him an effing twat.
Did he?
Yeah, which I thought, I can never understand why players don't
just
get booked for that.
Just a semantic point. Why do you abbreviate the effing and yet say the T word in its entirety?
Well, to
surely
be honest,
that's worse than the other.
I just said both, but
right, okay.
I think it's frowned upon.
An effing T.
Yeah.
I never understand why people star asterisks there.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
Well, still said it.
I don't know what sensitive is.
I've seen the word tits asterisk on a page where there is a picture of tits, which is extraordinary.
Where was that?
It was in the nation's favourite newspaper.
Hey, Barney, you had a point about football you wanted to make some time ago.
Football. I think United have often set themselves up like that in these big games. There was a period where they used to play Arsenal in that way, the sort of Gary Neville kicking lumps out of Reyes period. And I think Ferguson was acknowledging that he was going away to a team who were in very good form and just needed a draw, and it could have worked. I think we have to face the fact United didn't have many options. I mean, who else are they really going to play? You say bring in Valencia. But
Valencia's the best winger in the country.
Well, possibly, but remember we did that podcast last season, around about this time last season. Barry, you probably don't remember it. It was a live podcast after the Champions League final.
I remember.
Oh, Barney.
But at that point, you felt that they were in a really good place, and there's players going through that cleverly who's been injured. But you felt they were among Europe's top sort of two or three teams.
Yeah.
But they've massively gone backwards this season.
She young.
I think the point Barney made about chickens coming home to roost is a very valid one. United have been schooled by several teams this season. Wigan, Athletic Bilbao, twice, and now Man City, to name three.
How about Basel? Can we have Basel?
Basel, yeah, Benfica. I'd give you Basel.
Benfica.
And Benfica. And if you make the point that this is the fault of the Glazers, crippling repayments on loans, meaning they can't afford to bring in players they need, some United fans, dimwitted ones, I think, they'll point to the number of trophies they've won since the Glazers took over, but
yeah,
those kind of crippling financial circumstances are going to take their toll, and they're taking their toll now. They need a midfielder like a Bastian Schweinsteiger type to get in, break up play, and instead they're relying on their reserve team coach who's supposed to be retired, and they've Ryan Giggs who's, you know, not getting any younger.
You know an organisation's in trouble when they start bringing people out of retirement, don't you?
Barry's right.
Is it too late to add Crystal Palace, by the way, to that list of people who've schooled Man United?
No.
Stretching it a little bit, but anyway. But
Barry's right. I mean, it's momentum from a great team. You know, United have built this success on fantastic commercial revenues, which is in turn built on footballing success. And that has attracted some opportunists who are using that money to finance the rest of their empire. And they seriously need some investment in the team.
All right. They lost 1-0 on Monday night. Is it going to cost them the title, though? Here's that run in again, in case you've forgotten. United are going to be facing two teams for whom the season is pretty much already over. Swansea, who were held to a draw by Wolves at the weekend, and Sunderland, who couldn't beat Bolton. And City, meanwhile, have QPR, battling relegation QPR, and first of all, Newcastle, as I think has been mentioned several times. Jacob?
Yeah, I think if City win on Sunday, they win the league.
This is the game, is it?
Yeah, because we'll talk about QPR maybe later, but
yeah,
they're pretty dire against Chelsea.
Well, they were. What about Newcastle then, who got beaten, who got schooled by Wigan?
Yeah, this is perhaps the most stylish great escape there's ever been. And this is probably the greatest period in their history. To beat Arsenal, Manchester United and Newcastle in such a short space of time, and also taking the game to them, dominating the game against United. I think we said United had something like one shot on target against Wigan, maybe as last night showed, that's not such a big surprise now, but Wigan really outplayed them, and then they did the same to Arsenal as well, and then on Saturday they were again brilliant against
It's astonishing. Have you ever seen The Princess Bride?
No.
It's a bit like the bit when the Dread Pirate Roberts has got his back to the wall and it looks like he's about to be pushed over a cliff, and the Spanish guy, Inigo Montoya, is completely destroying him, says, he says, I admit it, you're better than me. And Inigo Montoya says, then why are you smiling? And Dread Pirate Roberts says, because I know something you don't. I am not left-handed. And then he flips his sword to the other hand and bish, 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 and then he completely dominates. It's almost like we're going to have done that in a nutshell.
Yes, it's completely like that.
But the same old thing will happen to them. They do really well at the end of the season. Someone comes and buys all their players and it takes them 6 months to get going again.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. I mean, they always lose players in the summer, and so yep, the manager has to you know, bring people through constantly.
And they're just slow learners.
They could also lose Martinez the way they've been playing.
Well, because the theories have been abounding as to why Wigan has suddenly clicked. Some people have been saying it's really simple, they're now taking their chances. Other people point to the fact that they're actually not conceding goals as well, which might be a function of the fact that they are scoring as well now, because you dominate possession, you scare teams, etc. They play further back. I don't know, Bunny, you've got another theory as well?
No, I agree with that theory.
Oh, that's the one, okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think, spare a thought for Nedum Onua, who I predicted a while ago may become the first player ever to play for the Champions and be relegated in the same season.
Hayden Mullins in the Championship.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
Yeah. So all right. Happens twice in the same season. Mm.
Still, it was an extraordinary thing. Newcastle coming in, six straight wins. They'd only conceded one goal in that period. They get beaten 4-0. Is it going to save Wigan, though, in the same way as Manchester City's win may not hand them the title? Wigan are still 3 points clear, but Bolton have a game in hand on them.
Yeah, Wigan's next two games, I think, are Blackburn and Wolves.
So. You say that as though Blackburn and Wolves aren't tough opposition.
No, they're not.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Blackburn. How about them, eh? I was going to come on to them a bit later, but it's inescapable, isn't it? Blackburn Rovers.
But they are in dire trouble, desperately need points to stay up, and went to Spurs and seemed quite happy to just lose 2-0 in a match which they did not muster a single shot.
Either on or off target.
Yeah.
Spurs could have played that game without a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
It would be nice to see Harry do that. Sub his goalkeeper off midway through the game, say, all right, if you're not going to have a go, let's see if you can. And keep subbing players off until they actually got around to having a shot. The question, though, how come Spurs, and I don't think I'm the only person who asked this, only won 2-0 against a team that abject?
I don't know.
I think they haven't been scoring goals recently. But on Blackburn, it's become very fashionable to say.
kind of explanations there.
Well, 2-0's not bad. They've been in terrible form. They haven't been scoring any goals. They haven't scored away from home in five of their last six matches.
Oh,
they haven't won away from home since December.
Well, there. So 2-0's not bad.
All right, then. Steve Keane took Yakubu off.
Well, Steve Keane has become quite fashionable to say that it's all Blackburn's players' fault. But
he's very dignified. He's handled it with a lot of dignity.
He makes me feel so sad. He looks so sad and cold and lonely, Steve Keane. But I think they've got some good players. I don't think their squad's that bad. I mean, Junior Hoylett is fantastic. I think Nzonzi is a good midfielder. I think there's a basis of a decent team there. It just hasn't worked.
Because they've got a bad manager.
And they maybe it.
Yeah, and I think two teams are bottom. Where are they? They're, yeah. Both promoted their number twos, and they're both bottom, Wolves and Blackburn.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. There you go. Now, what's the situation? Because we should factor Chelsea into all of this. Massive 6-1 win over QPR. Before we get too excited, of course, remember that Fulham beat QPR by six goals, or with six goals, earlier on in the season. All sorts of talking points in this game. JT's programme notes, I'm big enough to come out and man up when I make a mistake after I've first tried to get away with it and then be caught out by video evidence. Oh, no, that last bit I made up. But anyway.
Well, yeah, he wasn't big enough to man up and admit he made a mistake when he made the mistake. And then when it was proved that he had actually made the mistake, then he manned up and apologised for it. Which is fair enough. You know, he's a late apology is better than no apology at all.
Very true. Did they resolve the business with the Champions League? Should Chelsea win the Champions League, he will get to lift the trophy. Dublin Rue posting in on that topic. At least he'll get to lift the European Cup if his Ma doesn't get there first. You shouldn't laugh.
Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah,
it was an interesting game, actually. The behaviour of both sets of supporters was intriguing. Lots of Chelsea fans booing Anton Ferdinand. I don't mind the booing so much. The fans pathetic attempts to justify their behaviour afterwards, and it's all, you know, whataboutery exercise, but other fans do it, so that apparently makes it okay, or their offensive chanting was more offensive than our offensive chanting.
Well, let's turn on to a more positive note then, and Fernando Torres, he's back.
Yeah, he is. He had a brilliant performance for Chelsea, and who, you know, he seems like a lovely bloke, and it's great to see him back in form.
Great news, eh? Great news. Where were they all season, though? Hey, Chelsea?
Sulking with ADB.
Interesting question, eh? Chelsea fans. Ooh, who's this fellow Marco Marin who's going to be joining? Only two players have provided more Bundesliga assists than the German Wunderkind since the start of the 2009 campaign. I'm reading off somebody else's website. So it bodes well for Torres with him and Mata.
I think it's a very good signing, but I only think that because Raphael Honigstein said it was a good signing, so that's good enough.
He's often wrong, of course, Raphael. And remember that Dzeko business? Dzeko gate, as we call it here.
Yeah, who knows how that'll end up.
And then there was Champions League final.
He also...
There was away goals gate.
Away goals gate.
He told me that...
Why do we even have him on? He's, he's the most inefficient.
Is he really German at all?
Yeah, he's funny, he's inefficient, he's habitually wrong. I don't think he's German. I think he's just some English bloke pretending to be German.
I've also thought that
he saw a niche in the market.
You know. Is he actually Spanish? Because he really does have the voice of an English person doing a really bad Spanish accent.
Like Manuel.
Yeah, I mean, has anyone ever... I'm sure he is Spanish.
Jacob, any other top footballing celebrities you've...
I don't think
Paolo
Bandini's far too English to be Italian.
Yeah, exactly.
And I have a feeling we're about to revisit Paul Doyle's theory that... Roy Hodgson is just some bloke in a shed in Croydon firing off press releases about how great he is to the FA. And it's worked.
It's worked, hasn't it? All right, then. Well, we could have had a discussion about who now looks favourite to take third place, what with Stoke holding Arsenal to a draw, and who's now favourite to go down, etc. But we'll leave that till after all the midweek games and that, because we're back on Thursday. And let's move on to the exciting news that England are actually going to have a manager in place in time to do a little bit of prep before this summer's excitements. A couple of people posting in. Wonk, three entities having a worse Monday morning than me, says Wonk. Harry Redknapp's publishing deal, British football journalism's reputation for foresight and perspective, and Stephen Gerrard's England career. Letdown says that Hodgson sure does like the taste of poison chalices.
Well, I think it's a good appointment.
You've written a book about managers, Bob.
Well, yeah, exactly. I just think it's all a bit overblown. You know, this is what other countries do. They appoint an old, eminent geezer to oversee the team who's got a bit of experience, and that's the end of it. This is kind of Arthurian myth about the England manager, much like the captain, that we need to find the man who can finally remove the stone from the sword from the stone, and we're going to win the Euro. You know, he's just a sensible appointment, and the job of the manager is overrated. He's a good coach. There's a myth that you don't need to coach the players at this level, but that's obviously nonsense because professional footballers are children and they forget what to do. Yeah. And Terry Venables coached the team, Kevin Keegan didn't, and Terry Venables is much better.
Right. A couple of things there. One, he's cheap as well. So he was a cheaper option than the other. So from what you're saying, that's definitely the one to go for. Secondly, professional footballers also get bored very easily. This is the main charge that's being levied against Hodgson, that he bores his players and they got bored in South Africa and look what happened there.
If they get bored playing for their country, pick some different players. I just don't buy it. You're either bored or you practice and you're successful. I mean, I just don't understand that at all. I'd pick some different players then. I mean, let's not forget the real comparison is Capello. That's really who he's replaced. Would you rather go to the Euros with Capello? Who, frankly, I can't even remember why he left the job. It was so boring. He just got bored. Everybody got bored. It was time for him to go.
Be bothered to manage that.
I can't be bothered to get on a plane and go there. Was basically so. I'd rather have Hodgson, who will be passionate, will be involved,
will certainly go slightly
mad.
Yeah, that's the thing. At least the touchline's going to be entertaining.
Exactly. And it's simply more interesting if you have an English manager as well, because it tells you something about systems, about how well you're doing, where you are, and that's the whole point of international.
Well, you shouldn't be able to have a foreign manager. It shouldn't be allowed.
No, it shouldn't, because it's just pointless.
The good thing about Hodgson's appointment, and I also think it's a good appointment and kind of the obvious one, is that he's famous for, with the exception of his time at Liverpool, getting the best out of average groups of players. But the players he gets the best out of tend to know their average, whereas players with England and Liverpool perhaps are a bit delusional when it comes to judging their own abilities, and that could be a stumbling block for him. We also have the thing Jonathan Wilson's, you know, often told us about, endless drills in training where players tied together with rope in banks of four, wandering around the canteen tied together with rope in banks of four, going for nights out of the cinema, you know, tied together in banks of four. That will probably bore players who clearly have a short attention span, as Barney said. But some of the articles written about Hodgson yesterday were really mean-spirited and just downright nasty, and I think it's those articles were written by people who presumed their chum Harry would get the job.
Right. How much of an impact do you think it's going to make that, although he may be a good candidate and there's plenty of good reasons for hiring him, his experience at Liverpool so fatally compromised and made him so much a figure of fun, and his touchline antics at West Brom have contributed to this, that by now he is almost a lame duck in the England job, whatever, unless he gets an absolutely brilliant start, which he probably won't, that whereas Harry would have come in with this reservoir of goodwill, which might have seen him through any initial teething problems, Roy Hodgson by now has entered into the public consciousness as this kind of head-banging, hated by Anfield figure of fun.
I don't think he is hated by Liverpool fans. I think that's overstated.
I think he is. I think the reaction... I don't know if it's necessarily level-headed Liverpool fans, but some of the reaction from, you'd say, leading Liverpool voices...
Are you talking about dicks on Twitter?
Certain people on Twitter, yeah, are already undermining him.
Well, it's interesting as well, the total silence. All the England players who were tweeting when Capello went about Harry Redknapp was the man for the job. It's been absolutely no
I put it out there on the other day and said, is Harry Redknapp actually the people's choice, as we keep on hearing, or is he just his media mate's choice? And universal reaction was, no, it's just the media who want him and Spurs fans.
It is a myth that the public wanted Harry Redknapp. I don't think they did. I don't know anyone who particularly wanted him. He'd probably have done an okay job. I mean, England aren't very good. That's the fact of the matter. And it's highly unlikely they'll win Euro 2012. Hmm. Hodgson, you know, I think if they got to the quarterfinals, that'd be about par. Semi-finals would be excellent.
Isn't the point that Hodgson is clearly the right choice because he's a sensible manager, he's a bit of experience, but people are saying he's the wrong choice because of pre-existing problems in English football? The public, the players will get bored, everyone's undermining him, he's not... So we've got all these other problems that make him the wrong choice.
Well, yeah, because...
When in fact, he's the right choice.
So I like this...
Wouldn't be better off curing the terrible endemic problems in English football that stop Roy Hodgson being the right choice?
Hmm.
Well, there was all the talk as well when Pep left the job last week. Pep. Yeah, poor old Pep. But that he would get the job and suddenly England would start playing like Barcelona. I mean, you can't make Gareth Barry and Scott Parker play like Xavi and Iniesta, can you?
What I'm taking from all of this is that England aren't going to do very well, so it's good they didn't spend much money on the manager for the tournament.
But you're right about Redknapp. He comes in and teams suddenly start playing well. He does lift. He knows how to get an instant reaction. Yeah. Maybe that would
You see,
helped.
There are all these problems with England and we should try and cure those. It's not going to happen before... June gets underway.
I might do if everybody works really hard.
Hmm.
Hodgson as well will take an interest in stuff beyond the first team results, you know, building foundation.
He's on board already.
Yeah, there you go.
There's a lot of talk as well that one of the reasons that Redknapp didn't get the job is because of Sir Trevor Brooking's place on the FA board or in the selection process.
Oh.
Because of the way there are constant rumours of how Redknapp got the job at West Ham. In 1994, when he was Billy Bonds' assistant, and suddenly he was the manager.
Oh,
and
Steve Keane-esque.
Yeah, and Billy Bonds and Sir Trevor Brooking, I think, had room together at West Ham.
Have you seen those old pictures of Redknapp sitting there in his tracksuit and his football boots, sort of cross-legged, while Billy Bonds stands behind him in a suit, and Redknapp's his sort of gopher, and then within 6 months, all change.
Et tu, Harry.
Mm. Well, who knows? Jacob knows the story, I think.
Mm.
Some people have been comparing the snub of Redknapp to that of Brian Clough, which is quite funny because Brian Clough won 2 European Cups, 2 league titles with rather unfashionable teams, provincial sides. But he never won the FA Cup. Harry did.
That's
the big difference.
Oh, there you go. Spurs, is it any coincidence they've started winning again? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either.
All right. Well, we'll talk more as the Euros Hove interview. We'll have proper previews and stuff as a prelude to our totally comprehensive day-by-day coverage of the European Championships this summer. Yeah, that's right, listeners.
I can't wait to get over there, Jimbo.
Yep, me neither.
Hello, James. How are you?
Oh, very well. Sid Lowe joins us on the line from Spain. Sid, it sounds like there's something happening there.
Yeah, I'm at Getafe against Racing.
What? They're playing at the moment?
Yeah, possibly the least attractive game in the entire season in Spain, but I'm here.
All right. What's the score, Sid?
It's 0-0 at the moment.
All right.
I think that's also the score of the number of fans here as well.
Ooh.
Maybe that's harsh. There's probably 6,000 or 7,000.
It's 20 past noon, Sid.
Yeah, it's a
in
bank
your
holiday
time.
In Spain. It's a bank holiday.
Ah, right.
May the 1st, you know, Barry.
Of course.
Yeah.
But should everyone in Spain not be in bed anyway? It's siesta time.
It's fairly ironic that it's a bank holiday, May the 1st in Spain, when of course, the country's hit record unemployment levels. It's Workers' Day.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Now, Sid, why are you there?
Because it's a good question, that. Why am I here at the possibly the least attractive game of the season? Yeah. Because Getafe's not that far away for me to get to.
Not far enough.
Also, because I wanted to try and speak to their manager after the game.
All right, that's fair enough then. Who is it against?
They're playing against Racing Santander, who are already down. Getafe have a half chance of getting a European place. It's very, very unlikely, but half chance of getting a European place. Racing already down. Racing, who survived in the top flight for 11 years and then survived less than 2 years under the new president, Ali Said, who was blocked from buying Blackburn, but Spain saw no problem whatsoever with him taking over at Racing. He turned up, said they were going to be the third biggest team in the country,
right,
and then disappeared, and now they're going down.
All right, it's lucky Blackburn that they escaped such a similar fate.
Well, I mean, owners the amazing coming thing in. Is, Blackburn, yeah, actually, Blackburn actually got the relatively good deal compared to this guy, so that pretty much tells you everything you need to know.
Well, Sid, who was the manager who said this weekend that he would rather see his daughter get pregnant than his team go down?
Oh, this is absolutely brilliant. Pepe Mel, the Real Betis manager, was asked about the situation near the bottom of the table, and he said, look, I'd rather see my daughter get pregnant than Betis go down. And that provoked two questions for me. Well, first of all, surely it depends on how old your daughter is,
yes,
as to how much of a drama that is. And then, of course, it would depend on who the father is.
Also,
and as you can imagine, this has rebounded rather unfortunately against Pepe Mel, because when I noted this on Twitter, I was then immediately bombarded with pictures of his daughter. And I'm sure it's probably not been particularly useful for her.
Right. How old is she, Sid?
I don't know. Looking at the pictures, I'm guessing 19, 20, something like that.
All right. The look on Glenn Denning's face.
I should make it very clear here that these were just pictures, normal pictures. These
right.
I wasn't suddenly sent...
They're not Scarlett Johansson shower pics.
Exactly. I wasn't suddenly sent a catalogue of mucky snaps, no.
All right, then. That's good, then. Now, Sid, now...
She then went on to her Twitter to say, I'm sorry, everyone, to point out that I'm not pregnant.
Right. Good to clear that one up as well.
Yeah, it's very important.
Now, Sid, since we last spoke, as you predicted here on the pod... Pep Guardiola, and Barney's really upset about this, Pep Guardiola has decided to take a break, take a year off. He's feeling a little burnt out. And in comes Tito Villanova. I don't want to mispronounce his name, as others
no, you
have
don't,
done.
Unlike Mourinho. Yeah.
Yeah. Which means that, at the very least, we should get some very interesting Clásicos next year.
Well, we don't know exactly, you know, once he's given a public role, how Tito Villanova will handle it. But certainly, you know, the thing you're hinting at, of course, is that he was the one who Mourinho poked in the eye. And then having poked him in the eye, Mourinho then came into the press conference and said, I've got nothing to say about Tito Villanova or whatever his name is. I don't know who that guy is. Of course, by changing Tito Villanova to Peter Villanova, he might as well... He was basically calling him Willy Villanova. You know, slang for penis. So he was... So Mourinho then said, I don't know who this guy is, which of course is a complete and utter lie anyway. And if it isn't a lie, it's pretty lax of Mourinho, seeing as he knows exactly who all the players are at every club, who all the referees are in every game, who all the directors are everywhere, but didn't know who the Barcelona number two was. I wonder. Anyway, then of course, what I particularly love about this is that Madrid fans in all the battle that followed that, or the media battle more than anything else, because of course Mourinho only got a 2-game ban, which I think is pretty ludicrous, really. In all the media battle of this, Madrid fans trying to defend Mourinho put a banner up at the Santiago. Oh, is this first goal? No, it's not. Put a banner up at the Santiago Bernabeu, and it said, "Mourinho, your finger points the way." And it turned out, nearly 12 months later, they did indeed point the way, but for Barcelona, not Real Madrid.
All right. Well, interesting to get your thoughts on Tito as a manager, because of course Pep's been billed as the one and only, a truly special man in charge of Barca. But now Tito's been introduced as kind of Pep's twin. So, really, is there a series of these fellows?
No, I think he's been introduced as Pep's twin in terms of the... By the way, there's a penalty. I'm not even sure what that was given for. Mind you, that's pretty much par for the course in Spain. Penalties tend to be given for virtually nothing. And it's Racing who are going to open the scoring. Anyway, well, I assume they are, although they might well miss this penalty.
Who's taking the kick, Sid?
Who is taking the kick? I can't see quite from this angle. I'm trying to see if I can look across.
The mask slips.
We've got funny position. Funny position here. I think it's Diop who's going to take it. Yeah, it's Diop who's going to take it for Racing. Here he goes. Oh, he's hit the bar. Well, how about that?
Messi-esque execution.
Yep, it was right against the bar, so that's what the big roar is. The Getafe fans enjoyed that.
Okay.
Is he the same as Pep? I think, I mean, he's been introduced as Pep's twin because because the two of them are very close and have been for a long time, because Pep immediately looked for him when he went back to Barcelona. He immediately went and found Tito Villanova, who was working as sporting director. I think, was it Terrassa? He was at one of the smaller Catalan clubs and brought him in. So there was an immediate, if you like, kind of closeness there. Their approach and their attitude towards the game, their philosophy is identical. I think, though, it's foolish to assume that they're going to be exactly the same, in the sense that I think the charisma that Guardiola has, the amount of power that Guardiola has, are two things that Tito Villanova's not going to be able to match. You know, he wasn't a Barcelona captain. He wasn't a member of the Dream Team. He doesn't have the same kind of social impact that Guardiola has. But, of course, he's now been infused with some of that by taking over from him. And Barcelona handled this really, really well in terms of the emotional side of things, because they created, from a situation that could have, I think, been one of pessimism, even fatalism, a sort of sense of crisis and disaster, by announcing Tito Villanova on the same day as Pep Guardiola walked away, and by doing it as all part of the same package, they immediately, if you like, kind of stage managed the emotions. And I think that's been really, really good for Barcelona in the short term. Of course, the long term, we'll see.
Mm. Sid, what's happened in the game in the meantime?
Well, what's happened in the game is a missed penalty, then Getafe dashing up the other end, caught offside, and not very much else so far.
All right. Sid, of course, you, in another professional life, commentate in Spanish on Iberian media. Could you give us a little sample of what that sounds like to the action from Getafe Vallecano?
Well, I could, but with one very significant difficulty. I co-commentate in Spain, so I'm not the one leading, you know, I'm not the one doing the goal bit. So
I bet you could, though, couldn't you?
Yeah, I could, but I sound like a right.
You've always wanted to, Sid. Now's your chance.
No, I really haven't.
He's bashful.
You're not going to get me into that one. No. All right.
I hope your Spanish commentary was better than the English one you provided for the penalty, which I thought was poor.
You thought it was poor, but it was lazy commentary, really.
Yeah, I expect you better know, from
you. Expect better from a Guardian.
Do you actually get paid for that rubbish?
It's all right, because at the end of my commentary, you can go below the line and call me whatever you want. With impunity and with no identity as well, of course. And anonymity is the word I'm looking for.
Yep, magnificent. Listen, Sid, we better let you enjoy the rest of the game, and we look forward to an update on Thursday, of course, when what will have happened by Thursday? Anything?
Well, Thursday's big, James, because you've got midweek games, and you've obviously got the chance that Real Madrid might win the league. If they win in Bilbao against Athletic, they'll win the league. Barcelona play Malaga. There's quite a big battle on for the third and fourth places between Malaga, Valencia and Levante. European places partly up for grabs for Getafe, but as I said, I don't think it's very likely. It's more likely to be Athletic Bilbao, Atletico Madrid, one or two others, Sevilla maybe even in that fight. But it's at the bottom where it's really big. Villarreal against Sporting Gijón tonight, and that is huge.
Sid Lowe in Spain. In other foreign football news, you may have seen French Cup final, Cavilli against Lyon. Hmm?
I didn't actually, I forgot all about it.
Yeah.
Who won?
Lyon. 1-0. That's their first trophy in 4 years, though. In other Ligue 1-related news, Montpellier have opened up a five-point lead at the top.
That's astonishing, isn't it, considering how much money Paris Saint-Germain have...
About 10 times what Montpellier have spent. Now, it's interesting you should call that interesting, because I noticed in the minute-by-minutes of the Manchester Derby yesterday, you were poo-pooing anyone who dared mention... the financial imbalances at the top of the French league and their lack of impact on the current.
No, I was just poo-pooing emails about French football in general.
All right.
Yeah, I was getting baseball analogies and emails about French football. It made for a very dull and tedious minute by minute, which is my own fault for publishing them. It just got out of control.
All right.
It's all just good fun, you know.
Good. Yeah. All right. Now, Championship, it's all over, Jacob. Well, except it's not quite, is it? Because now there's playoff. Southampton have gone up.
Yep.
They're off to Vegas. They're all being flown off to Vegas by their team president for a special promotion treat. That doesn't sound like a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. I was just going to say, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. Nice, though, isn't it?
It's great. I'm really looking forward to them being in the Premier League as well. I love the manager. He's great.
Nigel Atkins.
Yeah. He's such a kind of... there's this new phenomenon of these... No, he's not low-key. He's very positive. He's full of phrases and little buzzwords and little slogans and stuff. He's
great. Give us one, Barney.
I can't really remember. I remember him going on at one press conference about, we don't look ahead, we don't look back, we just cross every game off with some red ink and we're straight on. You know, he's all kind of Mr. Positivity.
He's talking now about the evolution of the team.
Yeah, of course he is. Yeah. He talks about things like that constantly.
Right. Oh, that's good. Well, he seems a very personable chap, and of course...
He's a lovely guy, and he's done really well, and they deserve to go to Vegas.
Excellent.
But the free trip to Vegas is not as good as it sounds. I once got an all-expenses-paid trip to Vegas, and it ended up being probably the most expensive holiday I've ever been on by a considerable margin. Because once you get to Vegas, you start just... And it's free. You think, I've all this money. I can just throw it around and lose it in the casino. And you do.
I found it really boring, Las Vegas. It wasn't my cup of tea.
Yeah, I wouldn't be in a mad rush back.
Well, these players are, because they already went for their League One promotion only a year ago.
I stayed in that pyramid, that glass pyramid hotel.
The Luxor, is it?
Yeah, it was quite creepy. It's got this light that shines out the top, and billions of desert flies congregate in this light that it seems to be kind of conducting flies down into its horrible heart of darkness.
It's like a quartermass experiment.
And apparently it's haunted as well. One of the chambermaids or whatever told me that so many people died in its construction that it's quite normal to see sort of ghosts flitting around the corridors.
Did you see anything, Bonnie?
No, but I did feel quite weirded out by the whole experience.
I had a ghost experience in a hotel once. That was in Granada, of course.
Did you feel a freezing cold hand on you?
No, what happened was that we went to this hotel. It's a very famous hotel in Granada. I can't remember what the name of it is. But anyway, we went in and they said, no, we're all full. And then the concierge said, oh, there is still one room available. So he takes down this kind of cobwebbed key. And right at the end of this corridor, there's this one room, which is, all the angles are wrong. You know, it's just something very unsettling about it. And we didn't think much of it. But anyway... the next morning, we went about our business, and we were both a bit kind of tetchy. This is myself and Mrs. Jimbo, as she likes to be known. And in the course of the day, we kind of eventually said, you know, what's up with you? And I said, I just had a weird dream last night. I was in the bed, and where the wall should be that divides the corridor from the room, it was just kind of like a partition, and people were just walking in and out and looking at us. And one person stopped, this woman, and she was staring at us, and she was furious about us being there in the bed. And my wife said, what did she look like, this woman? And she described the woman that she had in her dream doing the same thing. It was the same woman.
Oh, that is scary.
Spooky.
Not true, but a scary story. No, it is a true story.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow,
yeah.
I read something very interesting about ghosts the other day.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, apparently hallucinations are really closely connected to carbon monoxide excesses in the air.
Oh.
And they've done a big study which has discovered that these places where you spot ghosts are seen and stuff,
right,
there's often quite large amounts of natural sort of carbon monoxide gas.
Way to kill my vibe.
Were you and Mrs. Jimbo actually sleeping in a car with a hose pipe coming through the window?
No, but there might have been a, you know,
but you know, Victorian England was when ghosts, problem. There were all these spotting ghosts and headless ladies and whatever, and they used to use lamps. You're sitting up late at night, it would be releasing carbon monoxide, those oil lamps.
Yeah.
And there's a whole sort of scientific thing linking spotting ghosts to carbon monoxide.
That's fascinating. Have you seen a ghost ever, Jacob?
Nope.
All right, then.
So there we go.
Barry?
No.
What's this got to do with Sam Allardyce?
Oh, yeah, sorry, right, the championship. Now, anyway, so Southampton have gone up, and that's terrific news, except for West Ham, who were hoping maybe that it would all go wrong for the Saints against Coventry. It didn't. So West Ham are now in a playoff with Cardiff, which starts on Thursday.
Yep, Thursday night.
You confident?
Yeah.
All right, then.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you confident?
Well, they've actually come into some good form now, West Ham, and they beat Cardiff quite convincingly at Cardiff 2-0 in March. And they've broken their record for away wins this season, West Ham, with 13. So to have the away leg first is quite good. Allardyce was quite despondent on Saturday after the game. He was clearly thought that they had basically blown it and they should have really gone up automatically already, and missed too many chances basically. And he was saying that the league season has very little to do with the playoffs, and anything can happen because it's the lottery of the playoffs, basically.
Yeah.
But I think that they will probably be in the final. Although Cardiff, obviously a very dangerous team, played really well against Liverpool in the Carling Cup final. Since then, they were in the shake-up for automatic promotion. Then they kind of dropped off after that. They've managed to get themselves back into it.
I know we're all rooting to see Big Sam back in the Premier League. Does he have good form in playoffs generally? Do you know?
He won the playoffs with Bolton in 2001.
Oh, there you go.
But he also has lost quite a few as well.
All right. And the other playoff, of course, is Birmingham Blackpool.
Yeah, that should be a good game.
Yeah.
Chris Hughton's done a really, really good job there. And Blackpool are just a crazy side who we saw last season. They can't defend, but they just attack.
They're mad. Yeah. Mad.
So that Blackpool could be a decent shout, actually, because in the playoffs, if defending seems to go out the window, and sometimes it's just the team that
mad people just going to score. Penalty shootouts as well.
Mad people.
Yeah, mad goalies. Remember that Swede, Thomas Ravelli? He was mad.
He always
did really well in penalty shootout.
Well, that's what happened a couple of years ago, wasn't it? Blackpool came up, and nobody thought they were going to be in the mix, and then they just, they were just crazy.
Well, they just outscored everybody, which makes you win games, yeah.
Certainly does. Depending on how many you can see. Oh, yeah, outscoring, yep.
Yep.
It certainly does. Now, just before we finish off then, because that's pretty much it for today's rather bumper Football Weekly, there's a midweek round of games in Italy. Juventus could seal the title if Milan lose their game, and they win against Lecce. Juve are currently 35 games unbeaten. In other news at the weekend, Milan won with a goal from Antonio Cassano, made his first start in 6 months and scored his first goal in 6 months. You remember back in October he had a stroke and heart surgery, so pretty remarkable to see him bouncing around there, back on field for Milan. And Ibrahimovic certainly seemed to enjoy his company, scoring a couple, and Milan looking rather like they were back in form. But rather interesting, the situation behind Juventus and Milan, because you now have four teams all level on points. Lazio, Napoli, Inter and Udinese all level on points with, what, three games to go? So that's going to be really interesting, that battle for the final Champions League place. Did you see Lazio, Udinese, Lazio, Barry?
No, I didn't.
Oh.
But I was going to just mention that I saw our old chum Paolo Bandini on Twitter today. He said that there was a story in the Italian press that Jose Mourinho had texted Zlatan and asked him, did he want to come to Real Madrid? Ooh. Zlatan said no.
Ah.
But apparently the same story was reported in the Spanish press, but in that report, Zlatan said yes.
Wow.
So
Zlatan also said that I'm like a good wine. I get better as I get older.
There you go.
Yeah. It's not all wines.
That's true of
better.
All good wines.
Wine gets better with age, isn't it? But anyway, listen, we're missing the point. On Sunday night, there was a fairly remarkable finish to the Udinese-Lazio game. Now, these two teams have been vying for third spot all season. So the Udinese-Lazio clash at the Friuli on Sunday night was a particularly decisive match in the question of who is actually going to take that third Champions League spot. Lazio went a goal down. Then in the final minutes, they went all out for the equaliser. Even their goalie, Marchetti, ran up the other end to try and score. He didn't. What happened was the ball came out to Udinese, who raced downfield. And a Brazilian fellow called Pereira scored. But in the midst of all of that, there was a whistle from the stands. And I thought the game had ended. Lazio's players thought the game was in. One or two Udinese players stopped as well, which left Pereira to run free and just basically stick the ball away. When the referee said, I haven't blown anything, that stands, game continues, Lazio players were absolutely crazy. Players came onto the pitch, people started shoving the referee, it was complete free-for-all out on the pitch. And there's going to be some very lengthy suspensions. Lazio already without loads of players. The goalkeeper, Marchetti, is going to be banned for 4 games. But what I found, there was lots of...
People making that gesture.
That gesture there. No, it was crazy. And, the staff were out, and there was pushing, there was shoving, there was everything. It was bizarre. But what I couldn't understand was Lazio were going to lose anyway. It wasn't a big deal whether they lose 2-0 or 1-0. It doesn't come down to goal difference, this four-way split. It's all on head-to-head in the Classifica Avulsa, as it's known.
It's the first thing you learn in football is play the whistle, unless it's the whistle blown by someone in the stand.
No, there was a nice ISO shot of the referee as he was running back following Pereira, who was chasing towards goal. And he clearly indicates, I haven't blown, play on, play on. So why Lazio felt so aggrieved afterwards is...
It's not a common problem in Italy. People still not sure whether the game's still going on or not. Or is this a one-off?
No, that's very much a one-off, a ghost whistle. Yeah.
I saw a ref the other day. I think it might have been the ref in the Chelsea QPR game, but I can't remember. But he was eating gum, chewing gum. And I thought, that must be quite difficult to blow a whistle while chewing gum. Because you might go to blow the whistle, but the gum will get stuck in the hole and then
the whistle wouldn't work.
Wouldn't it be easier just to not have gum?
What if you like gum?
Well, maybe you like to chew gum. Anyway.
That's my last laser.
I've noticed that Howard Webb spends most of every game now putting his finger to his earpiece and listening to whatever someone... I don't know if he does it out of a nervous habit. But
maybe he's having an interference. A car 64, car 64.
That can't be right, though. No. The earpiece should be banned.
All right. Anyway, Can't believe you're so underwhelmed with Mike Sattie. You had to really be there, because it was crazy to watch, but obviously not crazy to hear about.
As the ref blew the final whistle.
What's that?
I once scored a goal as the ref blew the final whistle as the ball went into the top corner.
Brazil 78 style.
Yeah, worst moment of my life.
Did it stand?
Was it the worst moment of your life?
It was going to be the winner against a really good team.
Yeah. That's rotten from the ref, though, isn't it?
Knowing you and your placid demeanour, Jacob, I'd imagine you took it well.
Yeah, we will.
Just put it down as one of those things.
We were quite hungover in that game, actually, as well. One of my mates threw up on the pitch.
Zidane fashion.
Yeah, or Sandro fashion.
Okay, that's enough vomit on the pitch stories for now. Football Weekly comes to a close with that. We'll be back on Thursday, but in the meantime, have a super time. Enjoy the midweek games. And many thanks to Barry, to Barney, and to Jacob, and to producer Ben, and you, the listener. Bye for now.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.